Welcome to Behind the Creator, a frank and open discussion podcast with creators, no-coders, and entrepreneurs. The show that aims to champion strategic thinking, content creators, and business builders. It seeks to identify how they've spotted opportunities, brought ideas, products, and/or businesses to life, and dive into the specifics of what made them a success, the platforms they use, and the lessons they've learned along the way. It's about strategy, it's about creativity, it's about marketing, it's about profile and brand building, and it's about the pursuit of success. In this episode, we enter the world of the pink gangster from LinkedIn, Darren Palatina. Darren unveils the secrets behind optimizing LinkedIn profiles to attract prospects and drive traffic by adopting a more strategic end-to-end approach. We discuss the significance of seamless onboarding process for new clients, the importance of a distinctive personal brand, his battles with copycats, and his imminent YouTube project dedicated to breaking the silence on male depression and PTSD, a cause very close to his heart, as you will hear. Alongside these great insights, Darren talks about his Social Creator Project, an all-encompassing course packed full of wisdom from some of LinkedIn's most well-recognized and respected creators. So let's dive in. I hope you enjoy the show. So welcome to the show, Darren. Thanks for joining us on Behind the Creator, episode 3 now. How does it feel to be in the first group of guests?
Yeah, it's good, man. When I heard you were doing this thing, I thought it'd be something pretty cool. So yeah, it's a good setup you got.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. So yeah, I mean, we spoke a little bit just before this about like what we're doing here, but we've spoken to a few other creators before this, but I think of the people that I've spoken to, you've been the one that I've been most looking forward to, just because your journey and some of the stuff that you're doing is so interesting. So I wonder if you can just dive into a little bit of like where you've come from, like what your kind of like first job is. And I realize that this is a very different path than most of the people that we will speak to, so I'm intrigued sort of hear about that, and then we'll dive into some of the stuff that you're doing on LinkedIn at the moment, for example, with your pink mafia, pink gangster stuff. So give us a little bit about like where you come from, like what your sort of first career experiences are, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, so I'll quickly touch on very early. So I was in a punk band for 9 years. I was a bass player in a punk band, and I was into the drug scene and all that sort of stuff. But to get out of that drug scene, I ended up joining the army. So this is a very, very quick walkthrough of my career path to get to where we are now. But that led me to the army. The army then, I did 5.5 years as a Royal Engineers and went to Afghanistan as bomb disposal, or IED search team bomb disposal unit. And then from that point then, I came back from Afghan. I was a mess after Afghan, obviously PTSD, depression, all that sort of stuff.
I'm not surprised, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a tough tours, and that, like, obviously, you know, we can go through that later if you want to, but yeah, and then from 2012, I left the army. Within 3 months, I couldn't cope being out, so I ended up going back into the Navy, into the forces, just for that structure, you know, that the career structure. And then from that point, I finished off my 11 years full-time service. Then I went into 3 years naval recruitment for the Navy. That was in my local careers office. So I live in Shrewsbury. That was in my local careers office there, just basically going around schools, recruiting, doing psychometric testing, stuff like that. And then I decided that like things weren't really going smooth after a while, because they were changing systems and a lot of people were leaving the recruitment service, and they were bringing like automation and different companies like Capita coming in to manage it. And I decided, okay, it's time for me to leave. So I ended up leaving there. I went to work with the council, my local council, as a employment coach. I did like about a year there as an employment coach. And then shortly after that, I joined the world of recruitment, like commercial recruitment in defense recruitment for, I was working with a company called AMS, or Alexander Mann Solutions, recruiting for BAE Systems, who manufacture the ships, submarines and aircraft. So that's kind of a very quick overview of my career. And then I wanted to do graphic design for like 15 years. I wanted to do graphic design for, and I just kept putting it off. You know, then the military came along, and then it was like, did the military service, and that was kind of the focus, and then everything sort of kept me away from design. And then January 2022, I thought, now's the time. I want to build a business. I'm going to build a business from home that can operate from anywhere. So it needed to be online. I've got a 3-year-old daughter now, and I just said I want to take that step. So the first thing I looked into was coding. And I thought, oh yeah, coding, you know, it's high demand. It's a well paid skill. I looked at it. I went into it for about a week.
Structured as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And I just got to a point where I did it for a week and I was like, this is frying my head. Like, I was like, there's no way I can do. I just can't get my head around coding. I know I'd only done it for a week, so if I stuck at it, I would have probably done a lot better. But, you know, I got a pretty good idea that wasn't for me straight away, because I was like, you know, letters, numbers, figures. I don't really like reading, to be honest. And then within a week, I thought, why don't I just go ahead and start doing graphic design? So I picked up, I went onto YouTube. I learned everything for free. I've not paid for any courses. I went through YouTube. And now, because of the PTSD and the mindset issues I've got, when I start to get into something, I get really obsessive compulsive. Like, I go all in and I learn very quickly, and I can really learn that skill fast and increase the capability that I've got very quickly. So within about 3 months, I learned, I started on Adobe Illustrator, and I started building. I was already on LinkedIn because of the recruitment. And then I started noticing, like, everyone having these, like, really cool banners and different bits on their profiles. I was like, that'd be really ace to just start building banners. So I started building banners, and I did them for free for quite some time. And then I don't know if you know Leah Turner. So Leah Turner is quite big on LinkedIn, but
yeah,
I was connected with Leah, and she saw my banners and she said, oh, how much are you charging for those? I said, well, at the moment I'm just learning, so I'm not charging anything. So she's like, well, you know, charge £50 a banner. This is just as I was starting out. Bear in mind, I'd already done like loads for free to increase my skill set. She says, start charging £50 a banner and make me a little post that she could put into a whole network, like a community group.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and it said, you know, banners £50, blah blah blah, all the information, get in contact with me via DM. And I thought, you know, yeah, it'd be nice if I can get one or two banners. Well, within 10 minutes of a post in that, I had like eight orders in 10 minutes, right, which is quick. And I was like, holy shit, like, you know, there's like...
It's the power of an engaged community, right? She has nurtured that community.
She's brilliant.
She has that established trust thing, which I think is a really interesting point to kind of call out there, like the power of, once you are known, once you are established and you have an audience that look to you and trust to you, like, there is a lot of power in that kind of referral side of things. So that's amazing though. 10 minutes.
Yeah. The thing is, mate, within two weeks of that post, I had 48 banner orders in 2 weeks, 48. And I was like, only been doing design for like 3 months. And I was like, I can't cope. I was just writing, like, you know, on a notepad, because I couldn't keep up with like who's ordering banners, who's paid. And it just went crazy, you know? So yeah, so like that, you say,
just a second there, like, just to call on that. So from when I went out and working for myself, like, I didn't have a low ticket item like that. I was never going to get a mass volume of throughput, but I already was kind of like grappling with some of the repeat orders and some of the issues and the systems required to kind of manage finance, cash flow, all of that sort of stuff. So what did you do from kind of going, here I am doing the occasional like free banner for people to get my name out there, to, you know, almost 50 odd orders in your backlog? Like, what was your kind of process around getting up to speed on that?
Well, like, straight away, like, I was working at that point. I was probably working 9 o'clock in the morning till like 12 o'clock at night. I was just going around the clock, you know. I was like maybe having lunch, missing dinner, just to try and keep up with it. But it was just so, it came in so fast that I was losing control. Like, I could not manage it. Like, and all I was doing then, if someone said, oh, could you, you know, do this in a banner? At the time, I was still learning the whole creative mindset. You know, I was good at design, but there was still a lot of creativity that could be exposed, if you like. So people were coming to me, could you make me as a cartoon character? Could you do this? Could you do that? And I was like, God, I'd have to go onto YouTube and figure out how to do it in Adobe Illustrator in real time as I'm designing the banner. And I would just have to copy step by step. And it was like,
saying yes to everything, right?
Oh, Matt, what it did, it really ramped up the speed that I was learning. Like I was already learning really fast anyway. But the fact that I had all these orders coming in, and what I did, I just said, look, I sort of said, well, I could probably do 2 to 3 banners a day, you know, a real push. And I could give like a 2 to 3 week estimation of when their time would come. So they would pay £50. They'd go on the waiting list. And at the time, what I was doing then, I was posting the waiting list, you know, public. And then I'd say, you know, this is where you are on the list and this isn't the next person. So I was moving the list up so people could see that things were being processed. And at the time of completing it, I would then post it live, you know, post it onto my feed, tag the person, and then tag the next person on the list saying, oh, you're next, you know, as if, you know, that's just to let them know.
The good thing about, like, yes to all of that, like, and the good thing with you and doing the work that you were doing was that you were helping people improve their profiles and on an environment and in an environment where everybody is like competing with each other, but there's, you know, there's some elements of camaraderie and groups and all the rest of it, but sort of unwittingly you kind of tapped on what I would consider a really rich vein of opportunity. Like everybody on LinkedIn is trying to get that little 1%, that little bit of, you know, standing out within, what is it, 1 billion people on the platform. Like, did you recognize the scale of that opportunity, or was it kind of gratuitous?
I wasn't sure how long it would last, and I wasn't sure if I'd end up having to go in a different direction. Like, I started on banners. Like, what I knew then and what I know now about banners, like the functionality of a banner, how it should operate, like layouts, you know, the purpose behind the banner. Like, I didn't understand any of that at the time. And back then, I was putting, like, contact information in banners, and I don't do that anymore. And there's a couple of reasons why, but I came across a guy called Danny Townley. He did banners and profiles at the time. I think he's just doing banners now. I'm not sure where he's at with stuff, but he was kind of like my inspiration to get into the whole profile scene, you know, a couple of years back. And he did some phenomenal designs. And when I started doing the banners, people were saying, oh, could you do the background of my photo to match the banner? I thought, yeah, I could do that. And then obviously the featured section came into it, and they were like, could you do, you know, images for featured section? Then we were looking at, you know, when you've got two featured section thumbnails and you can overlap an image on them to make it look cool, like it's all one piece. And all these little pieces of the puzzle came together. And I was like, why don't I look into, you know, how do you get found on LinkedIn? And I was looking into like keyword optimization and search engine optimization and everything like that. And all that started to come into it. And then I was like, well, where would we put keywords? And I had to do a lot of research into that. And then I found out that Google rank, this is something that people need to understand about LinkedIn. And it's the same as, like, you know, the website, is it Quora, the forum?
Yeah.
Quora, I think it's called. Google ranks them as high authority websites because of what's involved within the website itself. So when you have a fully optimized profile, a well-optimized profile, Google ranks it really high in their search results. So, like, to give you an example for profile optimization now, in my area, if you obviously Google puts your search results in your location as well, so it's, that plays part of it. But for where I am in Shrewsbury, Wrexham, Oswestry, if you put in LinkedIn profile optimization, I'm number one on the list, and I've done no Google optimization. It's just all off my profile. I do get asked quite a lot, does a profile guarantee results? And the answer is no. And the reason, and people are really shocked to hear when I say that, but the reason is we can fully optimize a profile. Okay. Now, once it's optimized, you can't just sit on your ass and do, like, I put a post out about it this morning. You can't just sit on your ass and do nothing. You still got to drive traffic. Yes, you're going to get organic traffic from search, but you've still got to drive traffic to that. It's like a website, right? Now, if your profile is essentially the pivot point, the absolute tipping point where a decision is made by a prospect to whether they're going to work with you or not. Now, if your profile isn't clear, it's not well optimized, it doesn't show your offer clearly, things like that. If your profile is what I just refer to as in shit state, if it's in shit state, the problem is then you're driving all this traffic, you're putting all this money into marketing, content, engaging, and they hit your profile and it just stops at that point. And they go, no, I can never get leads on LinkedIn. Yeah, because your profile sucks, right? So sort the profile out first, because anyone who does find it is then likely to become a prospect. But if your profile is really on point and then your content and engagement is shit, then at that point your profile is worthless, because you're not, do you know what I mean? It's a big, your profile is a really big cog in a machine of the money making machine to get a prospect from content prospect into conversion into sale.
Once you've kind of got people, you've built this brand persona for yourself, like what does your process look like then? So you get people to your profile, you talk about optimization all the time. What does your kind of onboarding process look like now? Because you've obviously talked about working off a notepad and pen, and then I guess like a Google sheet with list of names in. Like, what does it look like now? What platforms or tools do you use to kind of optimize, streamline, automate, like all of that good stuff?
So now what I do now is I've got a link on my profile. So my content guides you to my profile. My banner says go to the featured section. The featured section has two options, which is one, buy the profile course, which is what we'll talk about later. And the other option is hire me to design your profile. Now, when you click on that, you've got a couple of options there. You can either use a 30-minute consultation call. You can have a profile design pack, which is just the design elements of the profile, the banner, the photo, featured thumbnails, or you can go for a full optimized profile. Now, whatever option you click from there, then it takes you to Calendly. Okay. Yeah. Calendly then, at that point, Calendly will request payments. So we get payment up front in full. We don't do part payments. We don't do anything like that. Calendly will then say, right, this is the price. Pay that. Book a call. The call's like 15 minutes. It won't let you book that call for a minimum of a week. And the reason for that is as soon as I get that come through my emails to say that this has been bought, I get the email from Calendly. And what I do then, I send an email to that email address. And in that email address, it's got a description saying, you know, thanks for buying the profile optimization course, blah, blah, blah. Here is your briefing form. It's a Word document. Please fill in this form, complete it. It guides you through how to build like a mood board or an inspiration board to give us guidance on what kind of design you like. And then I always attach their own assigned Google Drive folder in the email. Okay, so they've got everything they need then to take away. Fill in the form. The reason I do a Word form now, Dan, is because they can do that without the internet. If there's no, like, you can't mess the form up if you just go and get the form again, delete a few things or whatever, and then save it. And then you've got a copy, I get a copy. It's not in the cloud anywhere. It can't be lost. It's there.
Yeah.
And once I get that, then it just says, you know, once this form's complete, email it me back, you know, put all your files into the Google Drive folder, like logos, branding packs, photos that you want in your banner, stuff like that. And email it back. And once I get that in the email, what I do then is I allow that time to pass for that 15-minute call. I have a quick 15-minute call with them to say, is there anything you're unclear about? Okay. And then I make sure that they understand that once we make a start, as soon as that design is started, there's only a 50% refund on that money if they pull out. And the reason being is I have to assign resources and my team and put everything into place ready for that time. So they only get a 50% refund at that point. Now, the reason I ask for full payment up front is to make sure that they're committed, because I don't want to work with people who are half bothered. Once I get that then, and I've got everything back, I've got all the files, I've got all the copy I need, everything I need, you know, to get what I need done, I then give them an estimation on the start date. Now, that could be a week away, it could be 2 weeks away, whenever our next available slot is. And it's typically a 5 to 7 day turnaround for a profile, like a full profile.
Yeah.
And that's with me and a copywriter, my partner who's a copywriter. And then once we've done that, then we then send the first draft, the initial review. They can do revisions and stuff like that. If they're not happy with the direction or anything like that, then they can ask for revisions. The copy and the SEO part is what takes the time, because you have to do a lot of like client, competitor research, market research and all that sort of stuff. Even looking into their offer and stuff like that. The design stuff, typically, because I manage it myself, I normally give updates quite quickly. I'll design a banner. Are you happy with the design? Happy days. And I'll get the features thumbnails done and then the photo. So that's kind of my process. And once they're happy, obviously, if they do, like I say, 5 to 7 days, but if they keep, having a revision, that's going to drag on the delivery time. But that's kind of my process. And then it gets delivered to the client in a Google Drive folder with a sheet of like headline. Here's your headline. Here's your, you know, URL, this, all the bits and pieces that you need. That gets delivered to them with a banner, featured thumbnails and all that sort of stuff. And I also say, if you want me to upload it to your profile for you, if some people don't know how to do it. So what I do is I can send a temporary password. I can log into your profile for about an hour, get it all uploaded, and it's good to go.
So if we could pivot slightly. So you've obviously, you grew very quickly. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, like I said, helping people on LinkedIn while being on LinkedIn and, you know, showcasing all the great work you do is like a really, you know, it's like, you know, it's just perfect sort of place and time for that sort of stuff. But you also put out a lot of really high quality content. And I wonder if you could just talk briefly around the kind of thinking and strategy behind the work that you did there, like the process that you followed to sort of get to, you know, to sort of establish yourself and sort of build that kind of audience and following.
So this all goes back to April last year. So I was contacted by a content strategist called Arsam. You can probably link him in the description or something later. But yeah, I was contacted by him, and I'm not normally a fan of people dropping in my DMs pitching. With DM pitching, you either piss me off or you're selling something that I really need. So it's a 50-50 chance. But you've got to do your research.
Probably less than that, right? You've got to be bang on at the right time as well.
But the thing is, like, if you do your research into a profile well and what they're doing, you can pretty much have a good estimation of what they're going to need. You know, if the content's not really good, you probably need a content strategy. If the design isn't good, they probably need, you know, you can kind of get an idea. And Arsam reached out to me in April last year, and he said, because I was doing my own carousels, and at the time I go really heavy on design. I love just getting really into it. But like, I'm a fan of simplicity at the same time. So although I do go over the top, simplicity is also very important in design, especially to get the message across clearly. So Arsam dropped in my DMs, and he introduced himself, and he said, "Oh, I just wanted to have a quick chat. I'm a content strategist." I was like, "Oh, here we go," you know, and sort of whatever. And he said, "Oh, I've got some example posts that I put together off the back end of your post and an idea for your branding." At the time, I didn't really have branding. I was just a designer, you know, didn't have any branding or whatever. And he came at me and he said, I've done research into all your followers. You know, bear in mind, I had like 2,500 followers at the time. He'd looked at their age criteria, like the age gaps at the age that they were in, the brackets. And then he came up with he figured that most of my followers were probably born in like the 70s and 80s, most of them. So he came at me with like an idea for my branding to go into that kind of 80s theme, you know, the old mullets, the old cars, you know, simplicity, bringing, you know, the pink and stuff like that. And he put that together, and he put one of my previous carousels together, and I really liked it. It wasn't the gangsters at the time, but I thought this guy's, he's put some effort into, you know, this. So I thought I'd give him a chance. I'll have a chat with him. We put our first post out May last year. So what is it? May 2022. And bear in mind, I had like 2,700 followers or 2,400 followers. And the first post, right, straight off the bat, boom, I had like $7,000 of work coming off one post. And I went from like 2,400 followers to like 3,500 in like a couple of days. It just went nuts. I couldn't manage the DMs. I gave up on DMs, gave up on comments. It got reshared. It was a post called Capturing the Pros. And it was about all these big profiles that had nice banners, you know, Leah Turner, Richard Moore, you know, all them big top boys and girls. And obviously we tagged them in the post, and it just went nuts. It went absolutely crazy. And I just said to him, I said, "Man, like, you've like multiplied what you've cost me for marketing this month off what I've earned off there." So I think it was about $7,000. It might have been five or six, but it was a big number that came in. I can't remember exactly how much it was, but it was, you know, well into the thousands. And I said, look, let's just, you know, send me an invoice for this amount. I'm just going to sort you out this month because you clearly know something that we don't. And then, yeah, every month was just like, well, every day throughout the week, he was doing 20 posts a month. And it was just like every day I was getting more and more followers, and it grew and grew and grew. And it went from 2,500 followers to 12,000 in 90 days, in less than 90 days. So his content strategy was really good. He's very, the type of content that really gets you a following is tips and tricks, things that can be implemented very quickly, you know, like a 20 minute job, do something that could be implemented over, you know, just having a coffee or over breakfast. You can even do it from your phone. So he's very good at the growth and following. And the problem is with that, though, is what people need to remember is followers don't always reflect clients, right? And what we're going to cover this chat because it's really important. But anyway, going after Arsene, we fell into a quiet period. And by this time, he'd already got us, you know, a massive following, loads of clients. I couldn't afford to keep working with him because he started to put his price up, which is obvious. He's going to do that because he's building a team, which is fine. You know, anyone would. But because of that, I couldn't afford to keep working. We had a quiet spell. And I said, look, you know, we'll have to knock it on the head for a little while. I'll try and get this thing back up and running. And then I'm going to work with him again at some point because he's phenomenal. But I've started doing my own content now with the, you know, you mentioned the gangsters branding and stuff like that. That goes back to the 1940s, which was my great granddad was part of the Italian mafia. So that's where my branding comes from. And the pink, I was in a punk band, like I said, for 9 years. I had pink hair. So I use pink as my color. It's a rebel color. You know, my brand archetype is outlaw or rebel. And the pink gangster was born at that point. Now, the branding, when we talk about branding, it's more than a logo, a color, font. It's about how people see you, like your tone of voice and everything. And I'm very raw and straight to the point. I'm not soft. You know, I did 8 years in construction and 14 years in the military. I'm not an emotionally soft person. I don't really care about offending people. I just couldn't care less. And it's just people, like, the trouble is people are too soft, a lot of people, and I know a lot of people listening are probably going, I'm not soft, well, whatever. But the point is, recently I've started doing my own content, and I'm very straight to the point. I swear in my content, you know, I don't hold back, I just say how it is, and that's my brand, and that's the branding voice of what I do, if that makes sense. And I think when people are looking into branding, they need to understand that. It's your tone of voice. Yeah. It's how, you know, like if I say to most of my followers, right, if I say to them, when you see my, you know, whose is this logo? What's my logo look like? None of them would know what, you know, I reckon 90% of my followers wouldn't even know what my logo looks like because they don't recognize the logo. Exactly. So, I mean, so how, and a logo isn't really important. And I tell people this over and over again, stop putting too much emphasis on your logo. But I see people in my DMs, they go on Instagram and they found, there was one day I had four DMs within a couple of hours in one day. And this guy on Instagram, he put an advert up and it was a photo of a male in a pink suit. And it wasn't like him copying me or anything like that. It was just coincidence, pure coincidence. And four people had seen it on Instagram and snapshotted it, screenshotted it and sent it to me going, have you seen this guy's advert? And with my branding now, if people see pink, they think of me. If they see a suit, they think of me. If they see a pink suit, they think of me. So it's the branding, you know, like, you know, you talked about.
Well, you found white space as well, which I think is a difficult thing to do. But I mean, my view of LinkedIn, and I think everyone's probably views of LinkedIn on that platform, is probably a small slice. But there was nobody else who was in a pink suit. Like, I think that is an incredible needle to thread in terms of finding A, something that really resonated with your character, but B, then actually, like, you know, executing to the point where it, you were like synonymous with it and you sort of owned that thing. And like you said, that to the point where people actually took a screenshot and shared it and was just like, what's going on here sort of thing, which I think is incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously it goes back to my heritage as well, with my great granddad being mafia. Like, he was a Sicilian jeweler. So it's well embedded. Now, you briefly mentioned you know, the copycats that we saw for a little while, and people liked the gangsters, they liked the rebel attitude, and people started, there was a couple of designs. I'm not going to name drop because it, I seem to have got such a, I don't want to call it a cult because it's not, but such a strong following who are protective of my brand, that when one of those guys put a gangster in a suit, not even in pink, they got absolutely ripped. Like, the people in, they were aggressive in the comments, and I had to put a post out to put an end to it, because I was like, you can't, I don't own suits, I don't own pink, I don't own gangsters. Like, people can use it, do you know what I mean? I don't mind, but the problem is that the one guy, he was using spies in suits, which spies wear suits, and it was just one post he put together about a story of a spy. Well, people saw the front cover and they were like, that's a gangster in a suit. And they were just like, I woke up to like, I don't even know how many DMs. I was like, what the hell is going on? You know, because people in like America, like 6 to 8 hours behind us, had seen it, and they're all in my DMs. I was like, and then he was getting ripped to pieces. Like, and I was like, man, you can't do that. You can't. And you say it's a form of flattery. It is. And it is annoying. But what people need to understand with branding is, if you don't go into your roots, right, your brand archetype, your characteristic, everything to do with branding, it's embedded, it's in your DNA. Your own brand is in your DNA, and people need to understand this. Somebody can copy a pink gangster. It won't last very long because it's not their brand archetype. It's not their brand. So they'll do a pink gangster the next time they're doing, you know, an elephant on a blooming unicycle or something. Do you know what I mean? Something random out the way. So people need
what
to understand
that.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of something completely opposite of that.
Definitely, but, is.
You know, that's what people need to understand, is when you've got your brand, people can copy it, but it won't last.
One of the things we talk about on this show is, like, it's one thing to kind of establish yourself, grow a brand, put the things in place to sort of grow an audience, and then look at ways of like turning that into money, like monetizing it to a certain extent, but adding value back to the following that you've got. And one of those, which I think is worth diving into, is the Social Creator Project, which were you the mastermind of?
I came up, so it was, I was with RSAM, and obviously at the time he was doing our content, and I said, I want to build something that we can, you know, take to market. Not necessarily, it won't be a high ticket price, it's just something that we can just put out there and maybe gain some leads from it. It was just an idea, and we started off by building, or Arsene's very good at building content strategy, so he built a content planner in Notion, and it had like hooks and everything like that. We had about 50 hooks, you know, like templates, so you could use the hook, customize it, and it would be your hook for content, and then you could put it into the content planner and start building your 30 days of content. We did that. And the idea then, we contacted a few big names like Jasmine Alec and a few other places like that, and said, oh, you know, would you like to be part of this? And we had an idea in one direction to bring people in like that. They could have like a thumbnail in there with all their socials to get contacted, add some like hooks or, you know, writing tips and tricks or something. He wasn't interested, or, you know, the four people we spoke to weren't interested. I said to Arsene, man, we've got to do something about it. We've got to get something off the ground. And it just wasn't, there was no interest at all for anybody to help us. And anyway, I was connected with a few people that were really good at what they do. And, you know, they were like Chris Atkin does storytelling, and Rory Flinders, like Midjourney. And, you know, I had a few contacts. And I just reached out to him and said, look, we're putting this thing together. By this time now, me and Arsene were like, right, I'm going to do profile optimization as part of this project, because that's what I'm known as. And this is something people need to keep in mind as well. Get very good at one thing. Don't try and do 20 things on LinkedIn, because you can't market it. going, get good at one thing, build authority in that thing, and people will come to you for your knowledge and expertise. So Arsene's a content strategist. He did a content strategy course. I did a profile optimization course. And then at that point then, I was able to reach out. Like Chris Atkin had less followers than me, quite a few less. So I could reach out to Chris, really good storyteller. He's phenomenal. Mm. And I said, would you be interested in doing storytelling? I was like, he was like, yeah. And then once we got three of us, it was very easy to get the next person. Oh, okay, we need, you know, someone who does like, you know, ChatGPT or storytelling, or like we've got Tara Fitness who does DM strategy. Then Rory Flynn was interested in doing a little one about, what's it called?
Mid-Journey, right? Yeah.
You know, and then I got someone else to do email marketing. And before we knew it, we had nine of us in this course, covering branding, profile optimization, content strategy, you know, keyword optimization and all that stuff. We had nine of us that have collaborated on this course now, and we've all put our specialist courses within one big course.
How did you go about doing that, right? Because my experience are, like, there's a lot of power in collaboration and bringing together lots of different expertise, and there's a huge amount of value in the course, and I'll put a link to it in the notes, because I think there's so much to sort of take away from that and learn from it. And like having nine people in there is amazing. So I'll make sure I put a link in the show notes. But I collaborating with one person and getting things in timelines and delivered on time is one thing. Nine feels like a logistical nightmare. So how did that sort of come about, particularly when, I guess, because you said this isn't a really high ticket thing, like, how did you sell that? How did that kind of logistical thing work? Because I imagine that there's something to be learned from that, for sure.
We started building it, and at the time, there was six of us at the time, and we were just going to launch, you know, minimum viable product, MVP. And I said, oh, it'd be really good to get, like, DM strategy or comment strategy. And I was like, does anyone even do that? And anyway, someone got tagged in my post. I said, we're looking for a DM strategist to join the project. And it was a girl called Tara. And she dropped in my DMs. I said, look, you know, we're due to launch in 4 weeks. You know, could you put something together as just an MVP, just something to get out there and we can improve it later. And that's what we did. You know, we put the minimum stuff out we could. And at the time, I think it was, I don't even know what we started to price out at, like £50 or.
Yeah, I think it was 50 quid.
I think it was about £50. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the idea with that was, as time, you know, each month we were going to just update a little bit at a time as we could. And we did, you know, we did it. And, but yeah, we were all in a LinkedIn group chat. So we all had a group chat. I was so stressed at the time because I was still like trying to do my work and trying to manage a team, making sure everyone's got their stuff together.
I guess they all were, right? In their own ways. Yeah.
We all burnt out. Like, there was so much pressure. Like, you know, if you put a deadline on something, you will work your ass off to get to that deadline. If you don't put a deadline, just go, oh, we'll just do it whenever. We'd still be building it now. So deadlines are very important, but they put you under pressure, and that's probably a good thing as well. But when we got there and we launched, all of us, every single one of our team, we were over burnout, you know, like people weren't talking. There was no communication between anyone. People's content had slowed down. You could tell it had hit people hard. But we did it, and like we've sold quite a few. It's slowed down now because we're not really marketing it, but it's a very good for the team now. What we do is we use it for as a position of authority, because not only am I a profile optimization specialist, I'm now in a team of eight other specialists who are very good at what they do. So, you know, people, if someone says, oh, do you know anyone that does like Midjourney? Yeah, Roy Flynn. Do you know anyone who does content strategy? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Or anyone, you know, it doesn't matter. DM strategy. Yeah, Tara. So now it doesn't matter which one of us gets asked about a particular niche or topic. At the point, we've got a team of people that we can rely on. But I did get asked a couple of months ago, I got asked if I could make the profile course its own individual course as well. So what I did is I've duplicated the course. So the profile course is its own thing as well now, because a lot of people, the project itself is £299. So the price has gone up a bit now because we've got so much in there. But a lot of people just need the profile part of it or one element of it. So we're in talks at the minute about breaking down the course as individual things as well. But if you bought it as all individual things, it'd be a lot more than if you just bought the whole thing in one.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at now with that. So I'll send you the link to the profile course as well, mate, because like that's only £49, you know, so people can grab that. It's running. I've had about 15. I've only launched it like a couple of weeks ago, and I've had like 15 testimonials now. It's all running at 5 stars at the moment. Like, it's phenomenal. That's not me bigging it up. It's everything I've learned over 2 years is inside that course.
Mm-hmm. So talking about courses and pivoting slightly, because I think this is a really important point to touch upon. So like this is talking to creators and exploring how they're growing and monetizing an audience. And while sure, everyone wants to make money and be profitable and all of that stuff, like you've gone and pivoted slightly or certainly have added another sort of string or project to your bow. And I'm really excited to sort of hear more about this because it's obviously something that's really, really close to you. But I wonder if you could talk through your YouTube project that you've got coming up. And I assume it's sort of a podcasty format, but if you could just explain like what you're doing, because I think it's incredible.
Yeah. So obviously going through the military, like deployments to Afghan and stuff like that I was in a mess with PTSD. I've been in a mess for 12 years with it. I had an ex-wife in the army. She was blown up in Afghan, broke her back, nerve damage. She went completely off the rails with PTSD. Mm. So I struggle with depression ongoing. I'm going through therapy at the moment, but I'll just sort of give you a bit of an insight of how it came across. But essentially I put a post out and I had the gangster photo at the time as a profile photo. And a lady was in my comments and she said, "Why do you never smile in your photos?" And I was like, "Because I'm always depressed. I suffer with PTSD, depression. I'm always, that's it." And anyway, within a couple of hours of me sending that comment on my post, I had nine men all reach out in DMs going, "How the fuck did you say that publicly?" Because they're struggling with depression and they haven't got the balls to step out and talk about it. I was like, man, like, you know, that's quite a big problem.
Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of stigma attached to it that needs dispelling. And I think that's why, like, I was so, because I told my partner that what you're doing, and she suffers with depression herself, and she's quite outspoken about it. She's an oversharer. And I think along her friendship group and what have you, it's spoken about quite openly, but she definitely doesn't feel confident enough or whatever to stick online. And that's before you get over that next hurdle, which is like, you know, boys don't cry, suck it up, like that sort of, that we're shaking off slowly but surely. But I think you know, stuff that what your work you're doing is a huge, hugely important thing.
Yeah, well what happened, Dan, was in Afghan, it wasn't my decision, but there was a girl that had a major infection. Now, if people go on the YouTube channel, they can see the whole story, but a lot went on with friends getting injured and killed and stuff like that. But there was a particular incident where I came across a girl with an infection, septic from wrist to shoulder, and she was going to die, about 4 years old. And there was a decision by an officer to leave her there because we had a job to do. So just leave her there, and she would have died 100%. And that stuck with me for so long, and I blame myself and stuff like that. And about about 5 months ago, I was playing with my daughter. She's three now. And all my PTSD just came flooding back, and I couldn't figure out for about 4 or 5 months what was causing it. And one day I was playing with my daughter and I was like, "Jesus Christ, like, you're the same age as that girl that we left in Afghan." Yeah. And it was like that. From that point, it became a daily reminder of what had gone on. And then, about 2 months ago, I was just having a meltdown. I was having a real bad breakdown, like, and I was, I had to come out on LinkedIn because obviously I got a big following. I wasn't replying to comments, DMs. I was just like in my shell. And I just came out with a video and I said, "Look, you guys ain't going to expect this video from me, but this is what I'm going through." And I got so much support off that one video. And again, loads of men that reached out like men in particular, saying they're struggling and stuff like that. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be good to get a way to get these blokes to talk? And I've been watching some YouTube channels where these influencers go around paying people's rent, helping them off the street and stuff like that. And I thought, you know, couldn't I build a YouTube channel and get men talking and try and get them the help that they need to get?
Yeah.
So I reached out to one of the guys, Bentley Ham, and I said, would you be interested in interviewing and telling your story on YouTube? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. You know, obviously it's emotional and a breakdown, but he went through a lot. And then I had another guy reach out, and then another one. I'm interviewing another one this week, and I've got another one booked in 2 weeks. It's starting to gain momentum. But the idea behind the YouTube channel, so the strap line I've got for it is shining light on the dark side of male depression. And the long-term goal with it now is, at the minute, it's just like Zoom calls because I'm doing it on a budget. But at some point, I'm trying to raise 65K through GoFundMe. And what I want to do with that money then is buy a big vehicle that I can convert to a mobile podcast station with all the recording equipment in there and everything I need, with like living quarters, so I can drive around the UK, into Europe, interviewing these men face to face, you know, maybe go out on like mandates, if you like, to just go out for a day and document all that and have a chat and go on walks and things, you know. And that's the goal now, is to raise that money to get that vehicle to go and do that and move into that eventually, because I think it's such a big topic that even with all the the current charities now, they're still not even scratching the surface. I think it needs much more efforts towards it, you know. And I think if I can grow that channel big enough and get the therapists and the treatment specialists on board as well, they become resources for those men to reach out. And the reason I'm focusing on men, Dan, I've been asked why men only, it's because we don't talk. That's it. Like, women talk to each other. They've got outlets to talk about stuff. Men just lock it up. You know, so that's what I'm doing with that channel, mate. So
it's hugely admirable. And again, I'll put a link to GoFundMe and I guess the YouTube channel as well, if anyone wants to go and check that out and just, you know, experience and understand what, you know, some of the things that you go through, and perhaps give a little bit of insight and understanding into how to actually interact and engage, because I'm sure that there are some points, times, moments in your life where you know, when you are going through it, where you literally just kind of put the walls up, or you know, like you said, like go back into the shell and just kind of deal with that yourself. So any kind of insights, information for other people to kind of understand how to engage with you as well, I think is really important. So look, we've reached the end of time here. That has flown by, mate. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And I will, you know, like I said, I'll put everything in the show notes so everybody has access to everything. Is there anything else you want to just add before we say goodbye?
Just quickly, mate. So if anyone's looking to get their profile done, right, make sure that you are very clear on your offer and your target audience before you do. Because everything comes into it, like your content is going to guide them to the profile. You know, and if you're guiding the wrong kind of traffic to your profile's no good because you've got the wrong traffic. So it's just important to keep that in mind, mate, making sure the clarity of everything from end to end is all aligned.
Brilliant. Thank you, Darren. I knew that was going to be a great show, and it was. So thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it, mate. Cheers.
What an extraordinary show. I think you can all agree there's some pretty incredible stuff in there. So thank you, Darren, for dropping by and telling us about what you're up to. Make sure you go and check out his social creator project. It is packed full of value. Loads of really, really smart people have dedicated some time and energy, and there's a lot of good stuff to learn from there. And obviously, if you have got anything that you can donate to his YouTube project, going out and talking to people struggling with PTSD or depression, I think it'd be a worthwhile cause. So make sure to check out the link in the show notes for that one. Next time on Behind the Creator, we're speaking to Barry O'Reilly. He's been at the forefront of every major technological change or shift that we've been through, from dot-com boom to mobile gaming to lean agile software development. And now he's the co-founder of Nobody Studios, ploughing a lot of time, energy, money and what he's learned into getting other startups and entrepreneurs and smart people up and running on their new ideas. Look forward to seeing you on that one. Bye-bye.